recall much about the Iranian reaction to this, this treaty?
Well, I know that there were Iranian influences that didn't like it, but I guess I don't really remember the details.
Okay. I've also read that public opinion polls in the early 60s showed that young Iranians had a rather critical view of the U.S. role in Iran and U.S. policy. The polls showed that they thought, for example, that the U.S. is propping up the status quo, or that the U.S. aid is designed to help make the rich richer and things like that. According to these polls that were taken, I guess USIA or something like that. But was there any effort to influence opinion in Iran to try to change the U.S. image in the public mind?
Well, this was USIA's mission, of course.
Yes, of course.
And it was a mission that in some respects was very successful, in other respects not at all. This was a time when Iranians became increasingly keen to get to this country for education or whatever. When our libraries in Tehran and other cities, the USIA libraries, were full, people coming to get at books to read. If I would describe it as the non-opinion cultural relationships with Iran were very strong. The U.S. had, culturally and intellectually, in its universities and so on, what lots of young Iranians wanted. In the opinion field, we faced the same problems in Iran that we did and had done. In so many countries of the world, including which the Russians always express, that the American people are good people, but the government is bad. And the argument precisely in Iran was as it has been in Pakistan, in the Philippines, in many other countries, that we were supporting a dictatorial regime rather than the people of the country. Wherever there are dictatorships of the left or of the right, this is the kind of issue that comes up. We live with the charges, try to have enough programs that reach out to the people to blunt those charges. But, as I say, the attitudes and opinions expressed on this issue tend to diverge sharply from the cultural relationships in terms of what individuals really want out of life. It's a phenomenon of our day.
Yes. What kind of efforts were there to, say, influence, you know, opinion-forming elites in countries like Iran? Were there efforts to influence the press there, or what were the information programs that were carried?
The information programs included a whole variety of things. We sent cultural groups of various kinds to Iran for performances or whatever. We sponsored academic seminars and conferences that would bring Iranian and American scholars together. Put out various publications telling more about American lives and emphasized such things as community debates about policy, the kinds of things we hoped that Iran might pick up. We had some scholarships and fellowships for Iranians to come here. And we tried to be in touch with a lot of Iranians outside the court circles.
Was this a function in which the CIA, the agency, participated in any way? In terms of more covert information programs or covert efforts? So from the other copies, there was documentation about ever since influence the media and so forth. Was this ever the case in Iran, or that you can recall? Or,
I don't recall. I don't. The agency in Iran had two missions, really. The principal mission was to develop a channel of information about the Soviet Union and Eastern European blocs. So, in other words, much of the work of the agency was external to Iran. The agency also reported on political attitudes and so on in Iran.
So those are the two main functions, sort of reporting it in terms of Iran being a border country, monitoring. Did how valuable or useful did State Department officials find CIA evaluations of the situation in countries like Iran? Their evaluations of stability, their prognosis for the near-term future and so forth?
They became pieces in the mosaic of judgment. Uh-huh. And sometimes these were big and important pieces, sometimes they were not. They had to be analyzed and judged the way anything else would be. Sometimes the agency would report that a particular person strategically placed one night when he was upset about something had poured out his heart on one thing or another. This could be really quite interesting. Other things could just duplicate what the consuls or the political officers in the embassy were picking up from their routine contacts.
Another thing that came up in 64, I guess the Shah approached the U.S. government for foreign military sales credits. Do you recall anything about that approach? The effort to get FMS credits, as they're called, I guess, foreign military sales?
This was one of the techniques, recipient countries got a bit more than was possible through the regular aid legislation, through the grant aid legislation.
I read that Johnson was at first reluctant to approve the request, but later on approved it when he met with the Shah in June of 64. Do you recall anything about that visit, the state visit in the mid 64 by the Shah?
I guess I don't recall very much about it. It was a successful visit again, in that we were able to get some points over, he got some points over. The relationship was strengthened rather than weakened. And as I said, I think we pushed less hard that time on some of these changes.
Did arms sales issues come up very often? Questions of the Shah's request for special weapons systems, or was that an issue that came up in discussion with the agency? Did the State Department have any
The Shah was ambitious for modernization of his armed forces. And I would have to say that in our little group, there continued to be divided opinions, but not very strong support for the Shah's ambitions.
Was the Pentagon more responsive, perhaps, or not?
Sometimes, sometimes.
Were there any pressures for arms sales, like commercial interests that were pressing for to make a sale to Iran? Was that ever a problem at this point? It was later on, but...
It didn't come to my level, I think the commercial people usually work more in the environments of the Pentagon than the State Department.
Uh-huh. You mentioned earlier about petroleum funds, the Shah's interest in increasing the share of income from petroleum revenue. Was this something that he brought up from time to time in terms of the share of income from the consortium operations? Is that question that came up?
Yes, he was He was convinced that the producers only had a larger share of the profits of the industry, and that he was pressing the producers in Iran to change the terms of the contract. The British, of course, were strong in their own industry in Iran at that time, so they took a lot of this heat, but they kept us in court.
Well, what did the State Department have a response to the Shah about these things? What kind of a response did it make?
I don't recall that we took it as a matter of principle very strongly at that point. It was a question really of the Shah's negotiation with the companies.
So it's left to that at that level?
And at that stage, it was all within the context of 3-hour oil, or whatever the exact taking place.
So during 63, during 1963 to 65, Senator McClellan chaired hearings on charges made by an exiled tribal leader named Kadar Khan.
Who don't know about
that. He apparently charged that the U.S. aid funds were diverted to the Shah's court, and the Shah's family, and so forth, in which I guess McClellan held hearings on these by a special operations committee or subcommittee. Do you recall, is this being an issue that came up with the Shah representatives here at the embassy?
The detailed hearings, as I recall, were handled mainly by aid. It seems to me that, again, the Iranian ambassador was very unhappy that this was happening, and we had the feeling that this was part of our process, and there was nothing to be done about it, except to try to be sufficiently responsive with information to disprove whatever charges he made.
Do you know how the issue was resolved? I'm not quite clear about it myself, about what happened in the end. The Congress stopped his hearings at some point.
I don't remember.
Okay. By 1955 or so, how did U.S. officials see the situation in Iran? Did they more or less assume that the Shah was taking a course that could assure him a more secure position over time? Terms of his internal reform program, were they fairly confident about his position at this point, compared to say the early 60s?
I think there was a belief that he'd made some progress. There was disappointment that he hadn't done more. And there was anxiety because some of the vulnerabilities had not yet been taken care of. I think there was an opinion that we would be dealing with it for quite a long time, and that we were only partially influential in our dealings with it.
Are there other major developments that I haven't mentioned that you can recall that might be worth talking about? There any incidents or issues that we haven't covered up to this point?
It's all right. They don't come to my mind right now.
I forgot to ask you earlier. You went to Iran. Who were some of the major personalities that you dealt with besides the Shah? Do you have any recollection of many specific individuals in the Shah's cabinet that left an impression with you, one or the other?
If I could dig back to my old date books, I would get that fairly closely. I'd rather not mention one or two because I may be forgetting the ones that are more important.
That's okay. Yeah. So in 1955, you became ambassador to Greece, and later on you were president of the Asia Society. Did you have any connection with Iranian issues at any of those later years, or was it pretty much off your agenda?
It was pretty much off the agenda.
Yeah, yeah,
now,
yeah.
In the Asia Society, we would occasionally have an Iranian exhibit or program of some kind that I would meet people. My one other substantial contact with Iran was attendance at a symposium arranged by Shahbanu in Persepolis in 1974. You've seen that book, have you?
I think so.
Yeah. This was arranged really by the Aspen Institute and brought an international group of people to listen to technocrats in Iran talk about what they were doing and to react, to comment. And it was a very interesting session.
What were your impressions? You spent time in Iran at that point. What were your impressions of the country compared to, say, 10, 12 years earlier? What did you see?
Signs of real development in a variety of ways. More factories. again, the same litany almost, that the roads were better. There seemed to be a broader educated group than there had been. Education has certainly gotten farther into the villages. A number of these indices looked better. It was interesting in retrospect that one of the critiques offered by the foreign participants in that conference was the question as to whether in this pell-mell push for modernization, and by that time the Shah had said he wanted to make Iran the next Italy, enough attention is being made to keeping the country cohesive and involving everybody, or whether some fragmentation would be possible.
Did you see the Shah at that point? Did you meet with them?
No, did not. The Shahbanu, at that point, I think, was trying hard to introduce some influences to counter what by then had become, and these are my words, certainly not hers, more megalomaniac, with less sensitivity to what opposition recruiters were doing. Somewhere in that period of the increase of oil prices, the Shah concluded that he could do it on his own, and the Americans and everybody else would have to listen to him. This made it more difficult to deal with. I don't know what Douglas MacArthur may have said to me, but it seemed to me that that was the time when the Shah was on a track that was bound to cause trouble for us. And George Wall has identified the turning point as about 1972. And I think that probably is right.
The turning expansion of arms sales and the militarization.
Exactly. And as Gary Six says, the kind of abrogation of American independent judgment as to things in Iran, the Nixon Kissinger approach, that the Shah is our man, and therefore we support him, and we'll accept his judgment on what's to be done, what's not to be done, and provide an arms aid and so on. It was an extraordinarily different approach to Iran from the one that we had in the 1960s.
Well, I appreciate your time with us.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, I should be interested in...